Welcome to Arcade Couch, the best place to chill with your friends and get game goodness each and every Monday. My name's Dylan Blight, and joining me on the couch this week, Ashley Hobley.
Hey Dylan, excited to be here this week. It's full of rads.
You're full of... No, and joining here is here the rads master himself, Kira Much.
I'm the rads master?
Is that a sly way of saying that Kieran is ghoulish?
He's nuclear.
An abomination.
Well, you know how the kids, I thought that's what kids say. Oh, sorry, I thought they say you're full of riz, not raz, sorry.
Yeah.
Riz. You're full of riz.
Different.
Raz. Very similar.
Fallout would be very different if it was riz instead of raz. You've got too much riz. It's infecting you. It's going to kill you.
What you're saying is I am...
She was already ruined. Oh, fuck.
What are these weeks, Lucy? Are you saying... Am I Walter Goggins? Am I
sure.
Level of...
Yes.
Okay, I'll accept that.
We have to be Walter Goggins.
Save 100%. Woo!
Deep breath. Holy shit. This week on the show, yeah, we'll talk about Fallout. So let's get into it. I've watched all of it. Ash has watched 4 episodes. How much have you watched, Karen?
One episode, so it's taking it easy.
That's good. It's enough to have an opinion. So let me spoil how it ends. Joking. So obviously, I think Fallout is the news of the week. It's everything's Fallout. Everyone's talking about the show. Everyone's been inspired by the show to want to play the games. Everyone's jumped back into downloading games. Fallout 76 has blown up. Press start here saying they've added a bunch of new content into it, a bunch of nonsense content. But anyway, they've added new content. Everyone on Twitter's talking about reinstalling the games. People reinstalling Fallout Shelter. I'm surprised Ash hasn't done that yet.
I already got a plat, so I don't need to.
Could, you know, get the achievos somewhere else. So, let's start with you, Ash, then. Fallout, yep. Prime Video Series. What do you think? 4 episodes in.
I mean, it's good. It's good television. They've done a good job of bringing the world of Fallout to life. I'm enjoying some storylines more than others and characters more than others.
Which?
Just the Brotherhood still stuff. It's kind of...
The least?
Yeah, the least.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah,
because are you finding it because from the first episode, I found it harder to connect with Maximus as a character the most out of the leads. Is that what it is for you, or is it the larger kind of?
Yeah, probably that's got a bit to do with it. I think he's a little bit more stoic initially, I guess. But yeah, I think just that. Isn't my most favorite storyline that they're covering. I think they've brought the world to life really well. It looks like Fallout, like all the suits and the Pip-Boys and the vaults, you know, other than, I guess, the scale of them, which you can't really, well, I guess, for the world of that you actually play in Fallout 4 and Fallout 3, like, the vaults are similarly sized, I guess. Of course, they introduced the idea of some vaults being interconnected, which I don't think was ever a thing in the games. But yeah, I'm enjoying it. I think it's really good. I've seen a lot of people saying it's the best video game adaptation. I don't know. I don't think it's as good as Last of Us, but it's pretty good. It's fun action television, which, you know, is what it needs to be.
I would say The Last of Us is the best adaptation directly of a video game story, like one-to-one. I would think Fallout is the best use of a video game setting and franchise to make something new. Because I think Last of Us, yes, even like, you know, with episode 3 of The Last of Us was amazing, the changes they made. But... I think that's, you know, Last of Us was already pretty fucking good, so you just had to recreate that in TV form. Whereas at least Fallout is almost entirely original for a story set in that world. I think they've done a really good job capturing the aesthetic and the look, you know, looking inside the vault that is 100% what the vaults look like in the game. You know, me too, and that, yeah, as everybody knows, I'm the biggest FOMO person in the world. Like, so watching the first episode, I was like, I was almost like, damn, I kind of, maybe I should reinstall a Fallout game and play Fallout. I didn't, but yeah. I thought was very much thinking about it yet. I was very much thinking about it. That's true. I think it does, yeah, a really good job of capturing the aesthetic, of capturing the vibe of Fallout. I think it's interesting from what I've read about kind of showing which choices from Fallout games seem to be the canon ones for Bethesda and the choices that they've made.
No. So if you've read any articles about, I mean, I'll say it because I think
I'm alluded to. It's largely about New Vegas.
No. So any article that says New Vegas has been deleted from the canon.
I had not done that. No. The only thing I've read is that the ending of New Vegas was chosen which way around New Vegas ends. That's not at all either. Okay.
No. I think any story about them changing or whatever the canon, anything to New Vegas, any story I've seen is just wrong.
Okay.
IMO.
It's for clicks.
But no, I think it's great. I'm on board with Ashley. I think at least from the first episode, I was maybe a little confused with the Brotherhood of Steel, because I think they try and do a lot of alluding to some things that happened and trying to be like, not without actually fully explaining them. So potentially for me, maybe they explain them in later episodes, or it kind of goes over things in later episodes.
But the thing is, the Brotherhood of Steel, you've always thought of them as bad guys, right?
No.
Or like, have you ever, were they your choice faction to join?
I think in Fallout 4 they were, yes.
Okay, interesting.
So, yeah, I mean, I always view them as bad guys.
I wouldn't say that. I don't think they're straight up bad. I just think they are a very militaristic / fanatical way of doing it, like a way of repurposing everything. I don't so much be like, yeah, they're just straight out bad, because I think you could also look at, say, Fallout 4, like the Syndicate and the Railroad and stuff. That has some bad aspects to it as well.
Well, the Enclave is in this show very briefly.
Yeah.
Can't remember if they show up in the first or second episode.
They're mentioned in the first second episode.
Yeah, they introduce old mate. But they're like, anyone who's doing it, like, each faction, I think, is doing something maybe a little bit of good, and then they have good intentions. But I don't think, if I was to say like which is a good faction in Fallout, I'd be like, I don't know, none of them.
No, I never call any of them good. But I think that's kind of the point in the Fallout universe, is nobody except for Dogmeat is good.
So I binge watched it yesterday. I think it's a fun series. I don't agree with all the, as Ash was saying, like, I definitely am like far from the, oh my god, this is the best video game series ever. I, all those headlines going into it, like seeing those pop up, and then I watched it, I was like, nah, like I'm enjoying it, it's fun, but like, nah. And here's my hot take, and I'll get it out of the way straight away. As to what Kieran's saying about the best video game adaptation that's not The Last of Us, the answer is Twisted Metal.
Okay. That's what I was about to ask. How does it compare to Twisted Metal?
Twisted Metal is better than this, IMO. Twisted Metal is highly underrated. No one watched it because they had some dumb trailers, but it was, as we've talked about many times, it's actually a very fun show.
I didn't watch it because it was on Stan. No, it wasn't Stan. It was Paramount, wasn't it? It was
It was on Stan.
It was on Stan? Okay, yeah. And I know you two love Stan, but
Stan's fine.
Support Australia.
I just don't have Stan, so.
I think, yeah, so the positives of this show is just the meticulous detail to recreate so many things that look like they come directly from the show. And not in a, like, Easter eggy sort of way, although there's some of that, but just the way they make a lot of the the world of Fallout. There's games come to life in this from people using stim packs to miraculously healing wounds, and the way Goggin's ghoul obviously looks, the makeup effect of that is very good. All the Pip-Boy stuff, like there's all the things from the game come to life. Like, you know, seeing her. There's a stage where she like looks at the Pip-Boy for a GPS and like twists it to zoom in and out as you sort of do in the map in the game, and you know, shit like that. It was all very cool. The guns all look like guns from Fallout universe. They sound like guns from the Fallout universe. Like, there's lots of, obviously, the T90 armor, as we've seen since the trailers, looks fantastic. Even if by the end of the show, the Brotherhood of Steel stuff, the Maximus stuff, is the least interesting, and he's by far the least interesting character in the show. But the armor and shit looks really cool. The helicopters and shit look really cool. I think my biggest problem with the show is it loves a good needle drop, like, to an absolute detriment. You know, they were like, man, we...
It's like, they need to remind you that this society never left the 60s.
Yeah, they're like... I think nearly every episode, and I felt like, especially across the first three or four episodes, and it sort of calmed down a bit over, after that point. So I think Ash might be through the height of it. But for the first like half of the season, I felt like nearly every episode had one or two needle drop, let's play a 50s song fight sequence moment or montage or, you know, something.
Might just be that there were more montages and that kind of stuff.
There was, but it's just like so many fucking needle drop moments. I was like, holy fuck, just calm down. I think the show does a lot of interesting choices. Like the choice from the outset to say, hey, this isn't its own universe. This isn't adapting anything for a video game storyline, but instead is part of the universe, is, I guess, a good and bad thing, depending on how you feel about some things they add to the lore, which I won't discuss without spoilers, but
there's a lot of origins.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say what the two main major things are without saying what the revelation is. But two of the biggest questions in Fallout history and questions are answered within the show. Number one, what's the origin story of the Pip-Boy, like himself? That's answered in the show.
The character.
And then number two, who dropped the bombs, is answered in the show. And that's been like one of the...
That's interesting.
Yeah, that's like one of the biggest things. So, and considering it's part of the overall lore of the games universe now, that's, I think, going to piss off some... I'm seeing some people like already like, this is bullshit. And I'm like, no. But I mean, you could... I'll say again, it's not revealed until like the last or second last episode, but it's, I mean, even though they say it in a certain way, I mean, they could always twist it and take it back, I guess. That's very easily, but
yeah, they could just say misinformation or something.
Like that. So,
because obviously it's been 200 something years.
Yeah. So it's set like 200 and whatever. Yeah. Years.
239.
I think Walton Goggins' character is obviously the standout for the show. As much as I enjoyed, I can't even remember her name.
Ella Pinnell.
Like, I really enjoy her. She's good as that lead. I enjoy her having this very Fallout-ish, you know, very like RPG main objective, which is just to find your dad, which is literally your objective from one of the Fallout games, obviously. That's fine, but I feel like, honestly, for the 8 episodes, similar to the games, it's like the show is at its best when it gets sidetracked on a side mission that's more interesting than the main objective itself. Like, there is, I can't remember, have you seen where they go to the Super Duper Market?
Yep.
Yeah. So like that, and like literally they make a joke about that basically being them going on a side quest at that point. But like, that's a lot of fun. And I sort of wish we'd had more moments like that, because that's when we get a bunch of Matt Berry. Which is really good. Also, I don't think you've seen it yet, but you do get to see I don't think this is a huge spoiler, but you get to see Matt Berry human form, not recording, okay, but like in a flashback thing, okay, later. Yeah. Obviously, yeah, like a Hollywood party sort of thing. So yeah, lots of cool stuff there. And I think they, even though this series in 8 episodes introduces so many interesting things for the world of Fallout at large across the games and now this TV universe. There's still so many things they didn't even touch on. By the time you get to the end, you're like, wow, he's, you know, no death claws, no super mutants, no behemoths, no, you know, like all these other factions. You can think, you know, like there's so many like Fallout, major Fallout things that aren't even touched on.
They didn't show up in LA.
True. Yeah, maybe they didn't. So, I think it's obvious that this show, I think, has been a hit. It's nothing. It's all everyone's been talking about for the last couple of days
since Thursday.
It dropped. Insane, I think, how much people have been talking about it. So, a second season is definitely a guaranteed at this point. Wouldn't be surprised if they try and fast track that motherfucker. Like, you know, get out sooner than later, but. It just makes me also wonder, like, okay, so you've done the whole, this is part of a larger universe, but will we see in the next Fallout game, you know, that's always going to be my interest. This the second you start saying, you know, it's all part of the same universe and it's only the TV show mentioning stuff from the games. It's like, I need the next Fallout game to mention stuff from this or have any of, you know, stuff.
I'm sure that's super easy. You just character with some text or whatever, you know. Obviously, the next game's not going to be until 2030, so.
Fallout Shelter 2. Coming soon, you know.
Unless they get another team on Fallout, yeah. I don't think we're going to get enough Fallout anytime soon. So. No. Yeah, I'm keen to finish watching it. I'm enjoying different aspects, including like the conspiracy around the vault. And the dynamics in the vault post the first episode, I think is really interesting. Because obviously Vault 33 is like these super positive, like people have been bred to believe that they're there to save the world and, you know, have to do the right thing. And maybe, you know, the introduction of the people who come in the first episode, like maybe has changes people's perspectives to some degree. So.
I think
that's that might be the storyline I'm most interested in seeing how that plays out. But yeah, I think everybody's doing a really good job.
The lore behind the vaults and like the different purposes of each of the vaults and the different kind of rules and planning that's put into each vault, I think is always one of the most fascinating parts of the Fallout lore and the franchise in general. So.
They also sort of explain in this series why and how that happens.
Yeah,
so cool. This series, they're just like, oh, let's fucking explain all the cool things, all the things that everybody wants to know.
Yeah,
maybe we didn't actually need to know, to be honest. So.
But do you get the feeling that like the writers and the showrunners are like, you know what, we might not get a season two. Let's just hit a bunch of the big questions out of the park now while we've got the show.
Well, not really, because the show ends on a massive cliffhanger for its main plot line.
Okay.
So, like, they sprinkle in these overall Fallout universe lore stuff, but for people watching this that aren't playing the video games as well, like people watching this who are just watching this as a TV show, they're like, it's definitely like, where's season two? You know, like, massive cliffhanger. What's happening? You know, plenty of unanswered questions to do with the main plot from 8 episodes. Installing any Fallout, Ash? No.
It's tempting, you know. I'm like, oh, you know, the Fallout 4 save's still there somewhere, unfinished, unlikely to get back to.
I can't remember who I saw talking about it, but just don't install Fallout 1 through Xbox Game Pass because I saw it fried somebody's 4090.
Really?
Like real bad. So yeah, don't do that.
That's funny.
Yeah, somebody said go back and play the good ones, 1 and 2.
No, go play 3.
Or New Vegas.
Go play 3 and listen to Liam Neeson.
Cool. Shout out to Johnny Pemberton, who was in Superstore. As he plays the Squire. Second Squire.
All right.
And he's funny. Yeah.
Yeah, bitch.
Yeah.
All right, press start. Right, let's move on. The Rogue Prince of Persia is a new roguelite platformer from the developer of Dead Cells. Kieran writes, while fans patiently wait for the remake of Prince of Persia, the Sands of Time, Ubisoft seems to be doing quite a bit of dabbling in various directions for the franchise, including the recently released Metroidvania entry, Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown. It seems that the Prince's return to 2D platforming isn't over just yet, though, with Ubisoft unveiling the Rogue Prince of Persia's brand new roguelike side-scroller that's in works at Evil Empire, some of the folks behind the most iconic examples of the genre Dead Cells. The game sports a striking lo-fi 2D art style that sports a very vibrant and considered palette, and the gameplay shown off in the JB trailer looks to be a good mix of style and substance from some especially cool-looking platforming in the Killer Score. What do you make of this, Ash? Are you keen for Prince of Persia roguelike?
I mean, yeah, I think it's really interesting that obviously this is like the second Prince of Persia thing we're getting this year, and it's so completely different to... Both of them are so completely different to anything we've seen Prince of Persia-esque. I think this one, especially with obviously the art style being very, very different to kind of anything Prince of Persia. Hmm. I mean, I'm trying to rack my brain, like what the art style kind of reminds me of. And I guess it's kind of got like an Adventure Time, kind of like the very darkest kind of characters from Adventure Time kind of style. But yeah, I mean, I never played Dead Cells, and I feel like, you know, that's a mistake. So maybe I'll play this one to make up for it. Yeah, I mean, it looks really cool. Really, all the previews that I've seen go up for the game have been very promising, even though people have only got like half an hour or so to actually play the game, from what I understand. Yeah, I mean, it's just cool that they're taking kind of risks with something like this. You just don't, you know, this is like a pretty big property, or was a big property for Ubisoft, and to see them like kind of hand it off to smaller teams to make exciting new things is pretty cool.
Even yeah, just to see them have success with it, like, you know, the original, like the Switch Prince of Persia game is probably a game that I keep looking at every couple of weeks and go, is now where I'm pulling the trigger and playing it? Like,
it was on everything, remember? It's on PlayStation, Xbox too.
Is it actually? I don't know why. Yeah. I just think of it as a Switch only game because it makes the most sense.
That's how they market it. They had that relationship. That's why they had it on the Switches at PAX last year.
That's just me not
thinking. I mean, I played it on Switch and I had a great time, but it is on stuff.
No, but I think it's, I think it's, it's interesting to see them do this, and it's like you sit there and you go, you hope to God that Ubisoft as a publisher and developer like takes note of potential successes from it and takes note they don't have to make their cookie cutter Ubisoft games all the time to have success. And if they actually give teams like the ability to make something they care about and not make something that's there to make money in terms of microtransactions or to make something that's bloated by the open world map dotted exploration games. Look, it, you know, yes, Dylan has personally sent them a bad message by playing through Avatar this year. Like, I think these successes should hopefully get through to them and get them to start supporting these types of games a lot more.
If we did a sound design award, I'm telling you right now, the thing that kept having me play that Avatar game is I actually think that game had some of the best, if not the best, sound design of last year in a video game. There's my...
It's your ASMR.
Yeah. No, I just mean game. Like it's really good. Yeah, fuckers. yeah, I'm keen for this. Looks really good. I didn't play Dead Cells either, even though I knew it was probably a game I would like. This, obviously, we like roguelikes when done well. I like the art style because it stands out. It's a bit different. Just, you know, separates it. If this looked like the one I just played, it probably would have been like, oh, okay, more of that, I guess.
You would be like, oh, they're cashing in as quickly as possible. It's
really but because it looks so different, yeah, just sort of helps make it stand out as well. I wonder what you're upgrading stuff. I don't know. Like, maybe I need to read some of the previews deeper, but I guess you just upgrade like your sword.
Maybe don't upgrade its skill.
I mean, that's not how Dead Cells work, so.
Yeah.
Is that
probably
how
you, your weapons?
Are you going to be super excited for this game if you don't get to upgrade anything?
No.
You just have to get that up. You want to play a game where you just
no,
have to
that'll
get
turn me off. Straight
yeah,
away, yeah.
Exactly. I thought that would turn you off. Yeah, that's right. This guy. All right. And something else that happened this past week, Star Wars. So Verge writes, new Star Wars Outlaws trailer introduces you to the criminal underworld. Ubisoft's open world Star Wars game is launching on August 30th. Hey, right. It already seemed like Ubisoft's Star Wars Outlaws was going to play like Grand Theft Auto in space, and the game's latest trailer only heightens that vibe. It also reveals a proper release date. The game will be hitting PS5, Xbox Series X, and PC on August 30th. The new glimpse at the game is mostly a story trailer, and it focuses on the criminal underworld, a key part of Outlaws. You're introduced to a crime family called Zerik Besh, which is described as, quote, new, rich, and lethal, end quote. They also seem to hold plenty of sway over the rest of the underworld, including groups like the Hutts and Crimson Dawn. Naturally, thereafter, the main character Kay Vess as well. According to the trailer, Kay, along with her adorable Oxol-like companion Nyx, is forced to buy her freedom, which involves stealing a large fortune from the Zerik Besh. It sounds like a complex web, and it also appears that Kay will have to form a team of similarly minded scoundrels to pull it off. What do you make of the, are you keen for Outlaws off the new trailer, Ash? Or
That's a really cool story trailer. Like, kind of set everything up that you would kind of want. I don't know if I'd call it Grand Theft Auto. You know, that would be my only critique of the article. I definitely get, I'm hoping more, I guess, Tomb Raider, Uncharted kind of gameplay, third-person shooter with clear cinematic moments and story. That would be my hope for what this actually is. And it seems like there could be, but obviously you're building up a crew to, pull off one last incredible heist or whatever. So, it's got me very excited. Obviously, I don't know if you've seen this, but the trailer has been incredibly disliked.
Yeah. So I was going to say, you can talk about the, I was going to see what everyone just thinks of it, and then we can talk about why
people have turned on this game. I think Nyx is going to be the must-have toy this year. It's this year's Porg or Baby Yoda, because it is adorable and I want one. I'm very, very keen for it to come out August, whenever it is.
Yeah, August 30th. Karen?
I think it looks great. I think this is exactly the types of games, you know. Ever since the original Amy Hennig game, was it Floor 1313 or something like that?
No, that was before. Hers was something.
Something.
Star
but
Wars.
Something. But like,
it was like Outlaws. The Scoundrels? I don't know. Hang on.
Sounds about right, actually, Scoundrels.
Whatever it was called. Ever since that, I think one of the things people have often wanted is a Uncharted-esque game of, you know, a character like Han Solo and playing in the world and playing it away from Jedis and playing away from the kind of getting more into the nitty-gritty darker side of things. You know, we saw that side of the world in the Solo movie. And I think this game seems to be building on the best parts of that movie and the best parts of the lore surrounding Star Wars in terms of the criminal underworld. And I'm really excited to play it out and to see what's happening with it.
Her project was called Project Ragtag.
Oh, we're so close. Yeah. I think the trailer's fine. I like the idea of exploring more around the different crime syndicate groups and stuff like such. That part is interesting to me. I would say the only thing is, as much as I wanted to see this stuff more explored, when we have like a minimum amount of game Star Wars games released, there's part of me that's like, man, another Star Wars game set in like roughly the same, like it's still within that same time period that the two Survivor games are, you know, it's like all around the original trilogy stuff. So I don't know. That there's always going to be part of me that's like, I just want a Star Wars game set anywhere else other than fucking, I'm going to Tatooine again. Fuck. Like, end. Make it end. More fucking sand. All I know is we get to see
Kira.
Crimson Dawn. we get to see Kira, exactly. So that's good. That's got me excited. I would agree. There's a, you know.
Do you reckon they'll get a mirror clock back?
I don't know. It looks like her in all the screenshots and stuff I've seen people sharing. So, like, I assume they'd get her back. I don't know why they wouldn't.
Unless she doesn't want to do it.
Yeah, unless she doesn't
want to do it. It's just a pay thing, yeah.
Usually they bring back the actors, though, is the thing. Like, anytime previously, they have brought back the actual actors. So, I hope they do, because Kira's, you know, cool character from Solo that we, you know, long hoped for more from, and we have a little bit in comics and stuff like that, but this would be the first like big thing because it's a you know, game and everything. Do I need fucking Jabba the Hutt middle of the poster, you know, middle of the lot of key art and stuff like that? I'm like, yeah, I don't really fucking care about Jabba the Hutt. Fuck that dude, goes out like a little bitch. There's also a part where she's like sliding into a Sarlacc pit, and you know she's going to escape it, and it's just going to make Boba Fett look like more like a dweeb. It's fucking great. Because she's going to fall down and go, oh, all I had to do was grapple out, and Boba Fett's like, ah! It's like, fucking nerd. Oh my God. Yeah. Get good. you know, so... yeah, I'm keen to see more. I'm gonna play it nonetheless. But yeah, I'd say, like, you know, I'm mid on it. I'm mid on it. Now the controversy has been because of the prices and the additions. That's what the everyone hates it for. So you can buy it for, you know, $99.95 RIP Australian. That's the standard edition. You know, I'm sure we can go pick it up from JB day one.
Or any physical media place, yeah.
Any physical media place will probably have it for like $89 or whatever.
Except for EB Games, who will just
have the price match. You can tell them the price match, and they probably will. Yes. But they'll have it at $99.95. Now, you can buy the gold edition of the game, which is $159.95. So an extra $60.
I'm saying $169.95.
Holy fuck.
I'm press start. Where are you reading?
I'm on the actual, I'm just on the store.
Okay. Well, that's probably more accurate.
I'm just going off the store.
Fuck you, Kieran.
I'm just going off ubisoft.com.au, you know? Like, yeah, gold edition, $159.95. That's PC. Does it change when I click PlayStation? No, $159.95. Maybe they dropped it $10. Anyway, so that.
It's all the backlash end.
Yeah, maybe. So another $60, basically. What you get with it is the stuff Kieran was talking about on Arca Couch Between the Cushions, if you want to go listen to that later this afternoon, which is you get the season pass, which says it comes with two DLCs that release after launch, the Jabba's Gambit exclusive mission available at launch, and the Kessel Runner character pack as well, which it's a costume. And you get a pre-order bonus, which is a cosmetic pack for your speeder and a cosmetic pack for your spaceship. And you get to play the game 3 days early. Now, Kieran, since you brought up everything earlier, I was sort of laughing because I knew I was going to bring this up when we got on the couch. But would you pay an extra $60
for this? No, this is fucking horrendous. Like, there's nothing in there that values itself at $60 more. I don't have a problem with like 3 days early access. I think, I know other people in the past have had problems with early access as being part of just additions. I think if somebody wants to play the game so fucking badly at 3 days earlier that they're willing to spend $10 to $20 more, who gives a fuck? Let them do it. You know, it's a single player game. It's not like it's an MMO or competitive or something that's going to give them a competitive advantage.
Just quickly, let them do it. Mm-hmm. So I just checked. Physical edition, $169.95. The digital edition is $159.95. So the same thing. Physically, $10 more. That's the.
I pay digital prices and I only buy things digitally for video games in general. This is where I always lose my fucking mind when it comes to pricing on digital marketplaces. Xboxes, Sonys, because it's like, why the fuck are you charging me, or why are developers charging me so much more when these platforms don't have any competition? when it comes to digital. There is no competition. It is only their store. That's the only place you can get it for those consoles. There is, you know, for me, it would make sense if the digital version is just cheaper than the physical version, because there's no logistics, there's no fucking printing costs, there's no distribution costs. It's just there is a save file in a cloud on somebody's server, and every time you hit buy, it just downloads it. It's not like there is very little in terms of physical costing in digital. So then to see a company like Ubisoft now turn around and go, okay, but for a digital edition, you need to pay $60 on top of whatever. And you look at the content you're given, there's not $60 worth there. Sure, if you want to say you're paying $60, if you look at it, you're paying $60 for a season pass. You know, I already said on Arcade Couch Between the Cushions, spoiler, any game that I've ever bought digital deluxe edition for that has a season pass, I've never gone back and played the DLC. I think
to help, if it helps you feel better, I've done similar things before where sometimes, not usually at launch, but like say I look at a sale and sometimes like say a game came out like a year or two ago and they've got like the complete edition of
all the
DLC and stuff, and I see it, they'll be like, oh, the base game, $23, or the complete edition's like $28. I'm like, I don't think I'll play the DLC, but just in case,
grab it. You know, and I get that. And it's not, don't get me wrong, right? I think it's funny that I've never played anything that I've bought a season pass for. I think it's very funny. It's very much me. But at the same time, I don't care. It's not something that's going to cause me any bother, because a lot of times I'm just grabbing the digital deluxe edition because whatever, you know, fucking endorphins in my brain just enjoys buying the deluxe editions more. If it's like $10, $15, $20 more, so be it. If I'm spending that little bit extra, it's going towards the developers. Cool, I'm happy with that. I can justify that personally. I can't justify this. Even if even buying a season pass, even just the idea of buying a season pass when a game is first released is fucking insane. Unless you like know, especially on a totally new IP or a new game. In an established world, when you have no fucking clue if you're going to vibe with the game, if you're going to enjoy the game. I get it for, say, you know, The Witcher 4 comes out and there's a season pass with Witcher 4. Fuck yeah, I love The Witcher. I'll play the shit out of it. I'll, you know, burn myself out after. I won't finish it, but I'll burn myself out playing 40 hours of it. But I think that's okay. For this, I'm like, what is it's like the Hogwarts Legacy had that fucking the PlayStation exclusive mission with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't like, it's like, okay, but then so what is that? What is that valued at? As a consumer, you know, the same with this, it says, oh, the Fett mission or whatever, and you're like, Jabba the Hutt, that's what I meant. Jabba the Hutt mission. Cool. It's like, yeah, but what does that mean? What am I missing out on? What am I buying? Is this a side mission that is like 5-10 minutes? Is it an extra hour of content? Is it worth it? Is it worth paying for? Am I gonna love this game enough that in 6 months, 12 months, whatever the amount of time is before DLC comes out? Am I going to love this enough to reload the game and play it again? And that's the thing I dislike the most about DLC is, like, it comes out so much later than the original game. I'm surprised. How do people remember? Like, I feel like, especially whenever the couple times I have played DLC, the first hour of playing that DLC is fucking shit, unless I've played the game recently, because it's like you're relearning how to play the game again. You're trying to remember what is controls, what is your muscle memory, what is the overall mechanics of this game again. And I don't know, it never sits very well with me or is very enjoyable. And yeah, I don't think this is a good play by Ubisoft.
I think it's interesting that I feel like you hit both sides of the argument of DLC. It's like, oh, they should release the DLC sooner, but then everybody's going to be like, oh, they've just cut parts out of the game and made a DLC. Whereas if it's obviously takes a while to make, you realize that they've been working on it except after the release of the game. And it's justified why it wasn't part of the game at release. But then it's taken so long that we've all moved on to something else and you don't know how to play the game when the DLC comes out. Yeah, I don't know if we clarified enough. You get the Java mission day one, but then there will be two narrative DLCs further down the line. $60 for that, that's a fair chunk of change. I'm sure a portion of that is for the free early access, which, you know, FIFA will be happy to make you pay $50, $60 to get those 3 days of access. I don't know. I just think people are very up. And I don't know. People are claiming this is the most disliked Ubisoft trailer or whatever because people are so angry. I don't think it's just this. Obviously, there is also the story of, I think it's the crew is being shelved or like taken offline. So people won't be able to play it anymore. And a lot of those people are coming across and using this as a chance to voice their disappointment at that game kind of dying. But, you know, I guess, you know, wait till the game comes out. I suspect the season pass will be available for you to buy later if you enjoy the game. I'm hoping reviews will have the Jabba mission in there, then we'll be able to tell you whether it's worthwhile getting, if it's a necessary story mission. The thing that irks me is they clearly put Jabba as a prominent story part of this trailer, and that story is that mission, from what I understand and how they describe it, is DLC that you need to pay extra for.
I can't imagine Jabba not being in the main
I'm assuming it's a mission with Jabba, but it's not.
It's something in extra the game. On top of it, but I can't see them not having Jabba in this game. Makes no fucking sense for him not to be in this game and to be hidden behind a paywall.
Also, I'm assuming I've read it as the way they're doing is that the mission is just free. They're just giving you early access to it.
Well, yeah, the mission is, well, you have to buy the season pass to get the mission. So,
do you?
Technically, it's paid.
Do you though?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just available on day one. Yeah.
I think it's a lot of kerfuffle over nothing. To be honest, not to say that
nothing new.
Nothing new. Yeah. Like that's the part that's sort of like everyone's going off about this. I'm like, man, this shit's been happening for years at this point. Like, why do we? Like every time this, like, do we just use like goldfish out there? Like, what the fuck? Like, I swear, if a game doesn't do this for 6 months, and then when a game does do it, then everyone's like, oh my god, like they get rolled up again. I'm like, this shit's been happening since like 2012. Like, what the fuck are we, what are you on about? If you don't, just don't buy it. Like, I don't, it really confuses me. And as to the DLC thing, the problem, and this is again just ingrained part of the industry, is they'll use the money from this, the pre-orders, to justify how much money and time they want to put into making the DLC. Sequel.
Or DLC, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, ideally, in a real world, Star Wars Outlaws or video games in general wouldn't be developed right up until a couple weeks prior to they released. And then in an ideal world, they would actually, you know, go gold months ago. And then it would come out, and then they'll give them plenty of time to start working on good DLC, and then people would buy it, and then they could release it like a month after the game releases because they've been working on the DLC. But then everyone, as you're saying, would be like, why wasn't it part of the game? Blah, 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 blah.
Even like, I think the only game I can remember doing this is Insomniac Spider-Man originally. When the game released, it actually came out with dates of when the DLC is going to drop. And it actually came out with which install, and it was like an installment of the larger game. And it almost like screamed of the episodic nature of previous Telltale games or Life is Strange games, mm-hmm. where when it released, you knew roughly the spacing between it. You would know you'd have a month or two between it. And if they did the same thing and treated this the same thing, where it's like, okay, this is coming out, and then in a month, we're going to release more. We've been working on it already. It gives us another month. We're just going to release more. You've already got the season pass. Cool. It's going to continue on a bunch of stuff, like, or it's going to be a completely separate new story. Yes, it, you know, it could be viewed at, well, that's just, it's like, you know what, it's like, it'd be like somebody getting pissed off with a butcher because they ordered a steak, it chopped the steak off, and then they've wanted a second steak, and the butcher said, yep, paid more. Even though the butcher is cutting it from the next, you know, section of the steak or the animal, and the customer being like, wait, but I paid for you. Why couldn't you have just cut that larger, and I would have just cut it myself later at home? That's, you've taken away from me what I could have already had.
That's a and it's, funny analogy.
Yeah, like it's like you've chopped it, and it's just like, no, if a story is complete, if it, you know, and I don't agree with, like, this doesn't apply to, like, games where, like, fighting games where you have to unlock additional fighters, or they're releasing packs of it, or anything like that. I don't agree with it on that side of things. But if it's a story, and if you play a game, and that story finishes, that game is into, it doesn't finish, but there's a cliffhanger conclusion, and then the DLC is something that enhances that or plays into that as a larger point or adds to it. Great. Awesome. That's how it should be, you know? You're not, if there is an end to the game, but it's like, but if you want the real ending to this game, you have to pay for the DLC. That's fucked. You shouldn't have that. That's stupid.
I think the problem is, yeah, so what are the basically the way I think it should work, if everyone got their shit together, it's like, and again, the many times I think half of video game development problem is like, it's just too hard for them to keep on a, like, a schedule and whatever. But, like, let's say they finish this game in February, right? The game's done, dusted. They're very happy with it. Ready to ship. They're fucking making the discs in February. Still coming out August 30th, right? They're not moving the date forward or anything. They've just, much like a lot of other medium, it's, there's just several months in between when it's finished and when it releases. Now, in that, in February up until August, they're working on the DLC. Now, because they're doing that and the game hasn't released yet, everyone on the internet goes, well, that should be on the disc. And they go, no, 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 no. So we had $10 million, $20 million, whatever, and that was the production cost of Star Wars Outlaws, right? So that's done. That's over there. That's what you're paying for. That's what we've finished that. We're now working on DLC, but you have to pay for this separate. This was a second production cost. And I guarantee, in my mind, I go, that makes perfect sense. All the gamers out there will not understand that. And I'll go, no, it should be free. It should be in there. It's not out yet. It should be free.
It's like people, okay, in that, if people in the gaming sphere are actually thinking that, it's like,
they
okay.
They will, though. I guarantee.
No, they will. No, they will. But I'm like, if you're thinking like that, back in 2001, 2002, people should have been pissed that Lord of the Rings wasn't just one massive, like, 9-hour movie. Because,
well, they shot them back to back, so really, they shot it all one ticket for, right? Two movies, yeah.
Like, they shot it all at once and then cut it into movies. Mm-hmm. Like, that should be, people should have been pissed, but they weren't, because each movie was segregated and cut, and that was the story of that movie, and that's awesome.
People and get weird people, about video games.
Yeah, people are fucking just, the video game as an industry is just fucking weird.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, in an ideal world, I think that's how video game, like, the production should work.
Yeah, 100%.
Because it would give them a lot more time to work on DLCs and, like, have, like, every, like, you know, I'm sure Ash doesn't understand, but as someone who likes to get things done with plenty of time before their due date, it gives you a lot more breathing room.
There is some developer out there that is just like Ashley Hobley that thinks it's okay not to upload the final version of the game until 12, like 11:59, the day before the game's release.
We're not going to dev shame here. I'm not going to catch, right? This is a supportive zone.
But yeah, because they don't, it's like, okay, they probably finished this now. Like, they're probably wrapping up. I don't know if they've said they've gone gold. I don't think they have. It's like, okay, so they're going gold this week, right? And then they're going into production of the DLC. And then they have no idea what the fucking DLC is to even promote it, because they're not starting to work on it until next week. You know, like, it's just, it's a terrible system. Like, the whole thing. Like, and no arm of the video game developers through to the marketing team through to the consumers slash gamers buying it, none of this triangle helps each other. It's a continuous circle of death, I think, is my it's my 100%. Thoughts on that.
All right, great.
Yeah.
That's one way to put it.
Yeah. All right, that'll do it for this week's episode, Arcade Couch. Let us know any comments, questions, concerns, deal with handling stuff we'll discuss this week, either by tweeting at us, ZDing at us, explosionnetwork.com/Twitter takes you to our Twitter/X page, whatever you call it. explosionnetwork.com/Discord takes you to our Discord page. And if you want to support us, you can do that by heading on over to explosionnetwork.com, checking out the website, or heading to explosionnetwork.com/support and buying us a coffee on our Ko-fi page. And until next week, we'll see you here, same time, same couch. Goodbye.